Welcome to another special bonus edition of the Paul Ryder Tapes. This week, oh, we have a very, very special soul. He sported one of the most legendary haircuts in Manchester. He was a club DJ and a radio DJ for many, many years, but is most famous and legendary for using his organ to rapturous reception with the Inspiral Carpets, who are still gigging to this day. He is the lovely legend that is Clint Boone. So, do you know much about what I'm doing? Did I explain to you, or do you want me to tell you?
I don't think so. I know it's like you'd done a project with Paul, a podcast-related project.
Right.
So it's a continuation of that now, isn't it?
Right.
You just decided to...
Well, what it is, so we broke up 6 years ago. We had a year where we didn't get on very well, and then we just became really good friends. And I did a different podcast, and I played it to him because I talk about him a bit in it, and I just wanted to make... It was about dating, so I just wanted to make sure he was okay with it. And he was like, oh, this is brilliant. Oh, great. And from him listening to that came the idea of him doing a podcast with me, because he wanted to write a book to correct all the lies that had been spouted over the years about the Mondays. And I knew he'd never get round to it. So I said, why don't you talk a book to me? So I'll prompt you with the questions and you just tell your story in as much depth as you can. Like warts and all the bad stuff, all the drug addiction stuff, all the breakdown stuff, the infidelities, all the crap, as well as the Monday stuff and the good stuff. So he agreed to do that, and literally he came round to my house every Sunday for about 6 months, and we did. He couldn't do much more than about an hour at a time because it really took it out of him, because it was like therapy, really.
I can imagine.
And then the idea was that we'd take the transcripts of the show and...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Produce a book, so it's in his words, but he doesn't have to physically write it. So then the idea was as well that we would bring in some other people who he'd rub shoulders with just to give their perspective, and he would me and him would talk to that person and include them in the conversation. But we thought, well, we'll get the life story down first, and then that'll be the launch pad for these other conversations. 12 days after he finished recording his life story, he died. And it was like 12 days. Like, it was really bizarre.
Incredible.
Because I think both of us felt a real sense of urgency to get it finished before he went to England. It was really odd. And then when I got the call saying that he was dead, I said, oh, I knew. I didn't know, but it was so odd. Anyway, so I'm left with about 15 hours of recording of him, his whole life story in depth. So now I'm going back over it and interviewing people who he talks about within that. We filmed everything, so I decided to film all the interviews as well. And I'm just going to make a long, detailed series. And maybe some of the bigger interviews will become like bonus episodes of their own that are related to it. So it's his story. Obviously, a lot of that is the Mondays, but it's also all the rest of the stuff as well. So obviously you've been a figure in his life. I know he had huge love and respect for you. You were very supportive of his big arm stuff. I remember going with him a couple of times when you interviewed him when you were XFM. And so I just thought, and it was, and you, I remember you DJing at Chico's fundraiser. So you've been a friend for many, many years. So I just thought it'd be very appropriate to ask you to be involved in this as well.
No,
so
I'm flattered. I'd have been offended if you didn't invite me to be part of it.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that's lovely. Obviously, you know Paul. He was a very kind of understated man, but he did feel very deeply for people and was always very touched when people showed him love and was very grateful for that, but maybe couldn't articulate it very well. I mean, I think we all have trouble articulating feelings to people. So it's just nice that we've got the opportunity to actually talk at a kind of deeper level, really, I guess.
Yeah.
So I guess the best place to start is at the very beginning and talk about how you first came across Paul and the Mondays and your first impressions and your first experiences with them.
The first time I came across the Mondays was, I think it was January of 85. And New Order were doing a couple of gigs around the north of England. So one was in Blackburn. And then the night after they played in Leeds at Tiffany's. And I think the band that played in Blackburn were called Blue in Heaven.
All right, yeah.
And then the band that played in Leeds the next night, I'd never heard of them, they were called Happy Mondays. And I thought, I wonder if this is a bit of a trick, like, because it's like Blue in Heaven and Happy Mondays. It's like Happy in Heaven and Blue Monday. So I thought, is this like a little New Order sort of gag? Anyway, there were two completely different bands. Happy Mondays that night was just like nothing I'd ever seen. It was just like a bunch of lads waiting for a buzz, like, but making music at the same time. It just looked so ramshackle and the way they dressed, it was like they were just... They looked like they'd not got dressed up to do the gig. You know what I mean? These were the clothes that just worn through the day, track suits and whatever else. And so I was smitten with the band from the first time I saw them. And then it was soon after that I'd start to hear the music being played on. I don't even know if they'd made a record at that point. I don't think they'd made any records. So when I started hearing records like The Egg, which I think Tony the Greek might have played on his Sunday night show, maybe on Piccadilly Radio, I started hearing this music. I'd never heard music like it in my life. It was just so... punky, but punky at the same time. It always sounded like it was about to fall apart. Even the records, where they'd been in the studio and made a record, it just sounded like this is all going to crumble any moment. And I really liked that bagginess. It was baggy before I knew what baggy meant. To me, baggy, as to do with the Manchester scene, was never to do with the baggy clothes. It was always the bagginess of the music. And I think the Mondays were the pioneers of that. So I fell in love with the music from day one. I was a big fan of the Stranglers, you know, and one of the things I loved about the Stranglers was the bass was always dominant and up front, you know, along with the keyboards. And I think with Happy Mondays, I recognised that it was probably the first band since the Stranglers, to me, where the bass was monumental, you know what I mean? It's like you could tell this kid on bass knew how to write a good bass line and how to play it. So, you know, going back to like Cuff Dam and Tart Tart, it was the bass. The bass just carried it beautifully. I became a fan of Paul's work from day one. I don't think I got to meet the Mondays proper until early 1987. We played the Boardwalk. We supported them at the Boardwalk. We were famous. The Inspiral Carpets were famous for supporting every bugger that came through the Boardwalk. I think we supported more bands there than any other band supported bands there. I remember the night we played with the Mondays. I remember the sound check. I remember hanging out particularly with Mark. I really bonded with Mark, first time I've met him. But all the band then and to this day, they're just a bunch of great souls, you know what I mean? That's how I've always felt about the Mondays, and more so now than ever, really. I think as you get older, you drop a lot of the shit that you have around you when you're youngsters. I remember them all being great souls, and I think I made some close friends from the end of the 80s with the Happy Mondays to the present day. They are some of my favourite people in the world are in that band, and now Paul was one of them.
That's nice.
And over the years, I always remember him being just a dead solid character. I know he had his issues from time to time and his problems that he dealt with that were quite public knowledge at the time, but he was always a dead solid geezer and always had time. It felt like he always had time for me, and he remained that great soul right until the last time I saw him. Then he had his big arm moment where I think at the time when he had Big Arm, I got the feeling that he needed help with that band. I think Mm-hmm. People would have preferred him to still be working with the Mondays, but he wanted to get that out of his system, and he did so, and he put out some great tracks. And I had the pleasure of getting him on XFM a couple of times on my evening show, it was at the time. What a great man. What a great man, and what a great musician. I think he's going to go down in the history books as one of the great musicians of this part of the world, certainly of that genre, you know what I mean?
Do you remember any specific anecdotes to do with your time when you supported the Mondays at the Boardwalk or in those early days?
I remember anecdotes of seeing them in the Hacienda, but a lot of that's still not broadcastable, even though we all know what was going on. But it was quite shocking to see it. As a wide-eyed young lad, I was like raised in a corner shop in Oldham. I was a proper working class, a son of a working class couple. No drugs in my life, right up until that sort of era. Never took drugs, never saw people doing drugs. It was just alien to me. And then suddenly you're in the Hacienda and there's these scamps at the back that we heard were in a band, and it was the Happy Mondays, this band that was seeing New Order. And there's all sorts going on in the back there, on the back benches, in the little booths. We know what was going on now in hindsight. But yeah, at the time it was a bit shocking, and it was a kind of world that I didn't really want to get too involved with. I love the music, I love the band, the Happy Mondays, but I think our band were famously didn't get too into that drug scene. We were by no means judgmental of anybody that was into it. It's just, I think as working class young lads from Oldham, we'd had shit day jobs, some of us, and we didn't want to go back to that. So we really protected our band. We wanted to really make sure we survived it. And made it for not just for this year. Let's still be doing this in 10 years. Here we are, 34 years after, still doing it.
So who came first? Did the Inspirals come before the Mondays, or was the Mondays slightly before the Inspirals?
I think timing-wise, probably the same, because the seeds of the Inspirals started off in the early 80s. It was like Graham, guitarist, Stephen, the singer, who's still the same guys I'm working with now. And I joined 86, I think I joined the band. So yeah, I think time-wise, they probably both came out or came together about the same time in the aftermath of punk and everything that came around that time. The Inspirals were really big into the psychedelic furs. That was one of the big influences that made them start the band. And I think when they first became a band, they were called the Furs.
Really?
After the psychedelic furs. And if you think about the name Inspiral Carpets, it's another version of psychedelic furs, isn't it? Inspiral Carpets.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, I've only figured it out in recent years, but I've not even discussed that with Graham. I keep meaning to mention it, but because the story was always like they came up with the name by getting a dictionary and getting two words, and it was Inspire and then Carpets. But I think they wanted a name that sounded like psychedelic furs. That's what I think. My journey through life got so much better than what I had planned the moment I met the Inspirals and joined that band, because punk had changed my life. At 1976, I saw the Pistols at the Electric Circus in December 76. So they did the Free Trade Hall in summer, which I wasn't at that gig, but then they came back in December, played the Electric Circus, and it had the same effect on me that night that it had on the 40-odd people that were in the Free Trade Hall gig. I just dropped everything, dropped out of college. I was at art college, potentially going to university to do a degree in art or whatever, diploma in art, and I just dropped a lot and got out of there because I wanted to get into bands and being on stage. And it took me a few years, but that's how I ended up on that journey that led me to join the Inspirals, and we are now in 2023, we're back on the road, and it's the most, I'm enjoying this tour more than I've ever enjoyed my time with the Inspirals in the past. I think because we are older and there's less issues, less baggage, more appreciation, we've lost a lot of friends over the years, haven't we?
Isn't it incredible though that you can go to one concert and literally your life trajectory changes overnight from that? That's the power of music, isn't it?
It was for me. I'd grown up in love with music, obsessed with music. I'd grown up loving Elvis Presley through the late 60s and the 70s. I was into 50s rock and roll music. I was quite obsessive about music generally, but I never really thought I could do anything about it, because kids like me from Oldham, working class kids from a town like Oldham with no music skill whatsoever, just didn't end up on Top of the Pops. So it was that moment of seeing that night when I saw on stage at the Electric Circus, it was the Buzzcocks, Johnny Thunder's Heartbreakers, The Clash and The Pistols.
Wow.
And seeing literally working class kids. I mean, Steve Diggle out at the Buzzcocks. I was at art college with his brother, Phil. So I'm stood there watching Steve Diggle playing bar chords, because it wasn't like Townsend-esque then like he is now. It's a pretty simple guitar bar chords, if I remember rightly. But it was like, I could do that. He lives near us and his dad's a truck driver. My mum and dad have got a corner shop. I just thought, I can do it now, I can do it. But you don't have to be a great musician. And Pete Shelley sounded as broad as I did, didn't he? He just had the same, albeit from a different suburb of Manchester. But so it's just suddenly like, God, I can do that. And I'm going to do it. And that's it, dropped everything and set off down that path.
Do you think?
But yeah, so like I say, it can be a single gig. It can be, for some people, it can be a single record, can't it? Or it can be a book that you read and that changes your life. But to me, that night, 9th of December 1976, was my Road to Damascus experience. Absolutely.
Wow, amazing, amazing. Do you think that the Mondays and the Inspirals could have influenced kids in the same way further on down the line?
Yeah, I think at the time I wouldn't have imagined that was going to happen, but I've seen it in retrospect.
Yeah.
I meet a lot of people that were inspired by our scene particularly, but I meet a lot of people that were inspired by the keyboard sound that I played, because at that point, nobody in this part of the world had a screaming farfisa as a lead instrument. Yeah. It's like some bands would go for the Hammond sound. That was the go-to cool organ sound in the 80s, but I went for something that was much more shrill, more cutting. It was more like just a scream. So yeah, I think we did inspire people. The Mondays inspired me no end. I was like very vocal back then about the fact that every time I went seeing an Happy Mondays gig, I literally was like down for the next 2 days, because I just thought, we can't do what they're doing. We can't be that good. They're at another level. They're otherworldly. And I'd come away literally just beating myself up about how shit we were. And then it'd take me a couple of days for people to say, no, you're not. You're great. You're good.
I'm like,
are you sure? Yeah. Are we good? I'll give it another go then. You know what I mean? I wrote a song on one of my Clint Boone Experience albums, which I did in the late 90s, Presley on Oldham Street, and it's a spoken word opening track of an album. And that old title, Presley Walks, it's based on the lyric that I wrote, Presley Walks Down Oldham Street, singing Cuff Dam, Cuff Dam, Cuff Dam. And that was all inspired by seeing Sean of the Mondays in Oldham Street, Saturday afternoon on his way to Affleck's or wherever he was going. There's references like that along my sort of timeline that are purely to show me love for the Happy Mondays. The Inspirals were all massive Mondays fans all the way through. And there's a little funny blip where there was something in one of the music papers. I think John Robb did a piece in Sounds or Melody Maker, and it was a big piece on the Mondays. And I remember him phoning him up. I was at home and he said, do you want to give us a quote about the Mondays? And I did this glowing review about how much I loved them and all that. I can't remember the exact wording of it, but it's probably still out there on the internet. But Sean took it the wrong way. I think he took it as me, I don't know, being condescending or being patronising or criticising. But I wasn't. It's purely, I love that band. And I think for a few weeks after that, there was a bit of sniping in the press. And I think Sean had a go at us. And then our lads, our rhythm section, had a go at him in one of the magazines. So
good.
It was that usual little, it was the press putting things up. Putting people up against each other. Not as serious as the Blur and Oasis one that came later on. Certainly not as mainstream news, headline news, but even during that blip, I just thought, I love this band and you know, I'm going to stick with them. And we went through a period of every time we put a single out, probably from 92 to 94, we'd get a fax from Sean in the factory. He was in the factory offices. He'd send us a fax saying, love that new single, top new single, Carpet Heads, or whatever he'd put.
So, oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Later on in life, when Sean was going through that period where he was financially crippled because of the management problem that he had. And during that time, I got a call from Bez, because I was doing a lot of DJing at that point. And Bez called me up saying, can you get X some DJ work? He needs some money coming in. So from that moment, I was getting Sean a lot of work. We're doing a lot of DJ gigs together. And that was lovely. I'm driving up and down the country with him in my car, my little Saab, and he'd be in the passenger seat here and reminiscing. And I think that was one of my favourite times of my career, working life, really. Hanging out with Sean and going to these weird little towns doing DJ sets together and then getting him back home, packing him off to bed and all that. Even now, you know, I think every week I have contact with at least one of them, whether it's Bez or Oetta or Mark and Sean. It's just really nice family to be part of. We did a tour together, didn't we? Was it back in 2012, was it-ish? We did a tour where we supported the Mondays on some big gigs, pretty big gigs. And that again, was a really nice tour to be part of, because we're all a bit older and greyer now, and we're just all just more tolerant of everything these days and more appreciative of everything.
How did you feel when the Mondays reformed? There'd been a long time when the original lineup weren't together, and Sean had been touring with session players under the Mondays name, but then they all got back together in 2012 with the original lineup, even including PD. Do you remember having feelings about that particular time? Were you pleased?
Yeah, that was buzzing, but just absolutely. As a fan of the Happy Mondays, seeing that lineup come back together was like perfect. So, yeah, and then to end up playing with them on that tour was even better.
So what was it like? What was the difference? You supported them in the very early days and you supported them again in that 2012 period. How had the backstage situation evolved or changed between those two eras?
Less drugs, more early nights. But it was what it was like. I think Sean was pretty much after every gig, he'd be getting off back to the hotel to get his head down or whatever. And that's the world we're in at the moment. I like an early night. I mean, to be honest, I don't have any days off. So we're touring at the moment. And the days when we're not gigging with the Inspirals, I'm on the radio. So I'm coming straight from gigs to come and do the radio show. And that. I think you learn to just handle yourself and look after yourself a bit more as you get older, don't you?
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, I like a drink, but I'm not tanning the booze as such. Even on a night where I've got a night out with the band after a gig, I'm still coherent, not being sick on myself like I used to be back in the olden days. I mean, it's not a good look, is it, at my age?
So, let's go back in time again. So, we briefly touched on Big Arm. Were you surprised that Paul decided to sing?
I remember I wasn't surprised that he was singing because I'd done a similar thing myself. After the Inspirals took a break from 95, I set up the Clint Boone Experience because I always wanted to be a singer. I didn't want to be a keyboard player. My main idea as a kid, but I grew up wanting to be Elvis Presley. That's as simple as that. From being like 7 or 8, I just wanted to be Elvis Presley. So I didn't want to play keyboards. That was a complete accident. Right. But when I got the chance after the Inspirals took a break in 95, I started this other band. And that was all about me singing, and I really enjoyed it. So I think when I saw Paul doing a similar thing, totally relate to it.
Okay, so moving forward in 2014, I think it was, we asked if you were DJ at Chico's fundraiser, and you kindly agreed to do that. Do you have any memories of that night or of that event?
It was lovely. I mean, because it was obviously, it was a bit of a news story at the time, wasn't it? The cannabis oil treatment and all that. Like now it's like quite normal now, isn't it? To people say I'm getting CBD or whatever. But back then, I remember it being in the news before I even heard about the fundraiser or whatever. Yeah, and I remember meeting Chico that night. I'm sure I met him earlier in his life, but I remember that night, just what a joy it was being with him. And he's a joyous person, isn't he, by nature. I just thought that event was amazing. I loved being part of it. And I didn't see him again then for a while until recently. That was the last time I saw him, I think, until the funeral. There's a lot to feel thankful of, isn't there, when you're in that situation surrounded with nice people like that?
It is, and the funeral in particular made me realise that I need to make more of an effort to gather people. Like it felt sad that we all gathered. There was so much love in the room, but it was underpinned with grief. Like, we need to have more parties that celebrate happy things, don't we?
Can I tell you something that happened at the funeral that I've not told many people about, but it's a really funny anecdote, and Paul would piss himself if he could hear this. So we've got a pet lizard. We've got a lot of, at that point we had a lot of pet animals, and I think we've lost a few over the last few months, but we've got a lizard called Manny Rango, and he's about 10 or 11 years old, a bearded dragon. And the only thing that he'll eat is these, what they call Mori worms, or it's like a mealworm, a big fat worm, a shell-like body. And these are the only thing that he'll eat. He won't eat all the things that lizards traditionally eat. He's not interested. So I get these worms and I feed them with carrot and broccoli and greens, whatever I'd like to be in the lizard. I feed these worms on it and then I feed the worms to Manny and he attacks them like a dinosaur because they are actually related to dinosaurs, aren't they, lizards? So we've got these worms. Anyway, occasionally, they'll escape from Manny's vivarium, as it's called, like his tank, And they end up on the floor of the room where the vivarium is. It's a weird word, isn't it, a vivarium? So anyway, there's been a couple of occasions where I've turned up to do a DJ gig and one of these worms has appeared because it's escaped and it ends up, when I put my DJ bags down, it'll climb in and come on the DJ trip with me. But the most spectacular one was when I got to Paul's, the wake, after the church, I got there a little bit early to set up and there's a few people in the room and obviously the tone was still a bit subdued because the service was beautiful, wasn't it? What a legend, Rowetta. That was,
yeah,
like, wow. But so I'm there setting up and there's black sheets on the table and I'm getting my DJ gear ready. And suddenly I see on the floor the biggest worm and it's just like that. Right? And I'm thinking, right, there's people mourning, Paul, like within a few feet of me, there's people sat here waiting for the rest of the people. And I'm there, I'm thinking, there's a worm near my feet and I've got to pick it up and dispose of it. I'm not going to kill it because I don't do that. Well, I feed them to a lizard, I suppose that's just as bad, isn't it? But it's worms there and I'm thinking, fucking hell, this is somebody's wake, it's Paul Ryder's wake and I've got a big fat worm here, I need to shift. Anyway, so what I did, I managed to pick it up. The doors were all shut, I couldn't figure out what to open the doors because all like emergency exits behind me, nobody had opened any doors yet. So I picked it up and I walked the full length of the room and put it behind a curtain at the far corner. I thought it's probably going to come out later on, but I couldn't do anything else with it. I didn't want to kill it. I didn't want to put it down the toilet or anything. So but that was the start of my
brilliant.
My moments at the wake of Paul Ryder was me having an encounter with a big fat mealworm. But let's say he would have loved that, wouldn't he?
He would have loved it. It's symbolic in some way, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember?
I wonder where that worm is now. It's probably still out there. It's probably still crawling around that venue.
Yeah. You could have put it in a sandwich or something. Probably climbed up the curtain watching everybody.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Do you remember where you were when you heard that he died? Do you remember how you felt?
I think I was in the radio studio, I think, when I heard the news. Yeah, I think I was in here and I phoned my wife right away to say, I've just heard Paul's passed away. Devastated, really. I mean, I've lost a lot of us have lost a lot of people over the last few years and not necessarily to COVID, but during the pandemic, it felt like we were just losing a lot of people, particularly in this industry. Pete Mitchell, Dave Booth, Denise. It just seemed like every week there was somebody else going, but yeah, Paul, I don't know, it shocked me. It was profound, isn't it, when you lose somebody like that. There's certain people in your life that you think are just always going to be there, and I think Paul, well, all the Mondays, it feels like they're all always going to be there, and then suddenly one of them's gone. Yeah, I was devastated. I remember when his dad died, that was a shock. That was several years ago, but I got onto both right away and just said, real story, was top bloke. Any memories I had of Derek were positive memories, same as with Paul.
Yeah.
And I think I did a little tribute for his dad on the radio show at the time,
did you?
And sent the recording through to Paul, yeah. And I know that our time comes, doesn't it? But it just sometimes it just don't feel right or fair.
What do you think his legacy is? Like, what do you think he's left behind that will be remembered?
Well, the obvious one is his bass playing, because that's there for eternity now, isn't it? Mm. And it is, as a musician, he is. Probably, well, I mean, I was going to say he's probably the greatest musician in the Mondays, but Gaz is pretty cool as well, isn't he? I don't consider me to be a great musician. I always said Craig Gill, our drummer, was the best musician in our band. And I think what Paul brought to the Mondays was something that was very special as a musician. For a bassist to make that much of an impact in the mix. And I suppose for the band to be cool with it being that loud as well, because I think in a lot of bands, it'd be like, no, you're on the bass, put that down, want my vocals up front, and Clint wants his organ really loud. But yeah, I think that's the main part of his legacy is his bass playing. But the amount of stories you hear about his humour, his caring side, being a great human being, quite humble as well. I think he was the kind that'd ever saunter into a room like I do, shout Boone Army, I'm here. I'm here. Where do you want me? Where am I sitting? You know, I think it was quite understated, wasn't it, in the way he handled himself in public. I remember off the subject a little bit, but you know the story that's in 24-hour party people about them poisoning the pigeons? So I remember, this is way before I knew the Mondays, I probably wasn't even in a band at the time, but I remember that story being the headlines on the Manchester Evening News about these pigeons suddenly dropping out of the sky in Piccadilly Gardens.
Can you tell the story, because in case, for people that don't know it, just explain what that is.
They got a load of rat poison. They got onto the top of the Piccadilly Plaza, whatever it's called. It's a car park up there. In fact, Piccadilly Radio used to be up there as well. And they just fed all this rat poison, I think it was rat poison, to the pigeons. And the pigeons gobbled it up, because that's what pigeons do. And next thing, they're like literally dropping out of the sky into Piccadilly Gardens and onto people's heads. And cars driving through. But it's just, I remember that story happening. I didn't know the riders at the time. But I remember it being a big news story.
Brilliant.
And then I remember as well, when the first time the Inspirals ever did a gig abroad, was out in near Valencia in Spain, and it was 1987, I'm guessing it would have been. On the bill was just a load of British bands, so the Pop Guns were one of the bands, the Happy Mondays, the Inspirals, the Lars played, and it was a weird two-storey sort of complex. It was like it had a casino vibe to it, and I think in the middle of it was like the cloisters or whatever where the bands were playing. And it turned out to be a brothel, we found out later on. But not that you'd notice, there was nothing like that going on the night that we noticed, just somebody told us afterwards, oh yeah, it's a brothel, that place. But anyway, so we got into town in the afternoon, and the Mondays went down to the beach. So this is a gig where Sean fell asleep on the beach in the sun, with no cream on, no sun cream on. I think he had his shirt on, but anyway, when he woke up, he was really severely burnt to his hands, his feet and his face. And they all thought it was dead funny to just leave him there in the sun. So he ended up, I don't know if he had to go, he might have had to go to hospital, but he ended up with like caked in cream and bandages. And he did this gig. And they went on about, I think they were due on at like 7 o'clock in the morning or something. Like it was one of these gigs that went on right through the night. I think they were like, they might have been the headline band. They were on at like 7 o'clock in the morning. And it was just proper wild. These bunch of mad people from Manchester, who we didn't really know that well still at this point. But yeah, Sean just really severely sunburned. I bet there's pictures out on the internet somewhere. We were nearly the first band of the Manchester scene to get into the top 40. I think we had number 41 with Move, and then a couple of weeks after it was The Roses, Fool's Gold, and was that the same night the Mondays one as well? I think
we were on Top of the Pops the same night. Yeah.
So we missed out. If we'd have got one or two places higher with Move, we would have been the first band to do Top of the Pops of the Manchester scene. But what I was saying is, seeing them lot do it was like, this is brilliant. This is helping us. Our next single, we're bound to get in the 40, which we did. So it was always, we all realised that we're part of the same sort of movement or same machine. I'd watch the Happy Mondays and think, God, so good. And we should just slack it off now. That's how it's the impression that it had on me. But yeah, so very supportive as musicians. But yeah, in terms of the other city, I mean, I wasn't into football at that point. I'd been football off a long time before that. But I remember in the early 80s going to Liverpool to watch bands like R.E.M. or the Bunnymen. We'd go over there and watch these gigs at the Royal Court. It'd be me, Chris Goodwin and Manny. This was like our little gang at the time. This was before the Roses and before the Spirals. And we'd like have a little sort of pact where when we got into Liverpool, don't let anybody hear you talking. You know what I mean? It was like, it was a dangerous time to be a Manc going to a gig in Liverpool. That was in the early 80s until 83, 84, that was the case. And it was only when things started happening in the Hacienda and ecstasy started getting to be part of the scene and the rave thing started, it was only from then on where you could really go and celebrate your mankness with your Scouse counterparts and vice versa. So in terms of the relationships that we've had and that I've had with those Liverpool bands, always some of my closest friends again, like The Farm, Ian McNabb, The Bunnymen. It's just like the Lars. I mean, I still see John Power a lot. Never any rivalry. Never any, a lot of banter in the early days, but just we're all part of the same thing. We're from the north and we're making music. We've all been inspired by the same kind of people, whether it is the Beatles or Jefferson Airplane or Funkadelic. We're all cut off the same block of wood, really, aren't we? Whether we're Manx or Scousers.
And you're right that one band's success actually makes the other bands more likely to be successful because they're all part of the same movement. So you're drawing attention to each other as well in the success. Yeah. And I'm really glad that it was seen that way and not as being competitive and kind of rivalry. It does feel very supportive.
I talk at the moment as well. When we first heard Fool's Gold, because that was like a game-changing record, that, wasn't it? And we, like, we were driving south to do a gig. We were somewhere on the M6, and it came on. I think it was Simon Bates on Radio 1 that played it, bizarrely, somebody like that. And it was like, okay, now this is... Everything's changing now. This is different. And it wasn't like... It wasn't jealousy. It was just like, things are going to change now in a great way, probably. We all felt like we had to up our game a bit. And before you know it, we're all doing a bit of funky drumming in our songs. I think our nearest one was, I think probably Caravan was a single that we did soon after that. We had a straight funky drummer sort of beat. And it was like, that was our homage to what the Roses had started doing, really. But yeah, again, that wasn't rivalry. It was just like, they've created something beautiful there. And let's crack on and see what we can create that's beautiful. And I think we did subsequently make some beautiful records. But yeah, the way I've always seen it is it's always been supportive. I don't know how would I feel if we'd have just had one single and split up. I might have been a bit bitter and twisted now. You know what I mean? I might have said, yeah, but our single's better than any of them. And we didn't get anywhere.
Are you doing a new album with the Inspirals?
We're not planning it yet, but I've got a feeling the logical result of what's happening, or the logical next step is at some point. Yeah, we're just celebrating the back catalogue now, but I think at some point. And we've got a bit of new blood in the team now as well, because we've got a guy called Jake Fletcher on drums, who's pretty much replicating Craig's beats. And he's still doing his own thing as well. We've said that he can totally be Kev Clark as much as you want to be Craig Gill. And we've got our boy Oscar on bass. He's an amazing musician as well. So what I'm saying, for the first time ever, we've got some incredible musicians in the band, because we've always been like garage punk. But suddenly we've got these kids that could probably knock out a great Fleetwood Mac album.
Brilliant.
No. I think one thing that we probably will do is, but when Craig passed away in 2016, we'd been working on some recordings for what would have been the next album. So we've got quite a few things in the can that I think it'd be nice to finish that at some point as a tribute to Craig, his final work.
Yep.
So I think that's very likely to happen.
It's funny you should say that, actually, because Paul, for years and years and years, the whole band, apart from Sean, has wanted to do a new album, and Sean never would. Paul said I've written 20 bass lines, like new bass lines for the Mondays.
Maybe it'd be a separate album completely, and the band just puts the tunes around that. But yeah, I mean, I'm really into things like that. Like I said, the Craig recordings, it'd be a shame to just have them left on a shelf.
Absolutely, yeah. And lovely to keep his memory alive and his work alive.
Yeah. Well, did you see the tribute we did to Craig recently? Like during the tour that we're doing at the moment, we have like the beginning of the encore, there's a film of Craig that comes up. So it's all movie footage that I've shot of him over the years. And we have that behind us, and then his name and the dates. But for the Manchester gig, his son Levon, who's 17, came and drummed Commercial Rain his dad's tribute's behind him. And Levon looks exactly like his dad. Bright red hair, freckles, big cheeky smile. And it was just incredible. We just absolutely smashed it. It was beautiful. And the crowd was just like in bits.
Brought the house down a bit.
Yeah, I mean, probably that gig to me is like probably the most important and I like gig we've ever done. You know, I mean, we did things like we headlined at Reading, 1990.
I was there. I was at that Reading gig. With amazing fireworks.
Yeah, on the first song. We had the fireworks.
Was it the end of it?
No, it was at the beginning. Oh, we probably did the end as well.
At the very end. Well, it was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, we decided on the day to let a lot of the fireworks off as we came on stage because people never did that. They do it at the end of the gig. And it was just, I think on the day we said, yeah, let's, as we're coming on stage, set the fireworks off, which we did. But yeah, we had some at the end as well. And then big spotlights.
I was working at MTV at the time and a load of us went down there and I knew... Yeah. I think Mikey, do you know Mikey Lights, the lighting guy?
Yeah.
I think he was in the lighting booth, so I was standing in the lighting booth with him when you were on. It was brilliant, like amazing show.
And we bought a video camera specially to record that gig, and video cameras then were like on your shoulder. No, I mean this is a domestic, so not a professional film, but we bought one. It was like £2,000, and it was like. Yeah. Just we forgot to film it, and there's one bootleg film on the internet somewhere of somebody with a really shit camcorder, but that's the only record of that event. But going back to the monumental gigs, so we headlined GMEX in 1999, so like all the other Manchester bands did. But the gig we did at the Albert Hall last week, because it was our first time together in 7.5 years, and through those years we all thought it's not going to happen again. We'd all written it off. We didn't want to do it without Craig. And then suddenly we're doing it, we're getting the band back out. That gig was just, there's one gig that I'd like to be judged and remembered by for the Inspirals, that'd be it. Because we pulled the rabbits out of the arts like absolute fucking magicians. We smashed it that night and to get Levon on at the end. And it was just like, it's like in moments like that, you think he'd sort of, you know, amble onto the stage, get behind his kit drum and then do a little celebration bow at the end. He walked on stage, I introduced him. Nobody knew we were doing it. Ladies and gentlemen, Levon Gill. Craig's film's going at the back. And he walks up to the microphone and just goes, "All right, Manchester!" Like that before he'd even drummed. And I'm thinking, well, I hope he does it right now. But anyway, he smashed it. Really beautiful performance then. At the end came out, did a bow, brought the house down, threw his sticks out and all that. It was just an incredible gig, and I think to me, like I said, the most important gig that we've ever pulled off. I think that.
Excellent! Oh, fantastic! Yeah. Amazing. Is there anything I've missed? Are there any other incidents or times when you've crossed Paul's path that you got a story about?
That's it, really. But what a geezer, and like with a lot of them, it's a pity we never got a chance to say. Because you never know, it's the last time you're going to see these people, do you? So, but he'll be watching us. He knows. I've got a feeling that worm on the floor at the wake, that was probably him coming back to say, you know, see you soon, Boone.
And you didn't have any unfinished business with him? Like, it's not like, you know, things were left on a bad note. Like, that's what I'm really grateful for, is that me and him were good after, like, breaking up a marriage and... We were good. We got through all that, and so I feel quite peaceful about it.
Yeah. Same here. I mean, I don't really have fallouts with people. Really, that's not in my nature. So no, definitely not any unfinished business. And I think, like you said before, I think I can rest assured that he died thinking I was an all right bloke.
Absolutely. No, I know he really loved you. He was really grateful to you. But like not just the big arm support, but the thing you did with for Chico, and just generally being. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're a great person, so yeah.
I'm all right.
No, it's lovely.
No, but
and I'm really, really grateful to you for your generosity of spirit.
It's a pleasure. It's beautiful to be part of that family. Not just the Mondays, but the New Order lot and the Roses, and what a family of people and. What a great bunch of records we've made between us.
And what an amazing thing you've done for the city, really. I mean, you've really put the city on the musical map. The legacy, it's amazing.
Collectively, totally. Yeah.
Collectively.
And it's we've got a big thank you to Tony Wilson as well, innit?
Absolutely, yeah.
Like shepherding us together and putting us on that pedestal. And it's like...
I saw a really funny thing on... it's on YouTube. And it's something that was made for schools programmes about independent record labels. I'll send you the link because it's worth watching. And it's from like the mid-80s probably, and Tony's in it. And it's made for schools, but it's all about the Happy Mondays and the business of the Happy Mondays. And there's a bit with Tony Michaelides being annoyed because the Mondays didn't turn up for an interview and they were really late for something. And Tony's sitting there and he said, well, I understand why you're upset, Tony. He said, but you know what? The truth is, I really quite like that.
Brilliant.
And that like, without Tony, if they'd been signed to a major label, they would have been dropped for lack of professionalism.
Yeah, totally. Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
That lack of professionalism is what was magical about them, that out of the ramshackleness came this magic that would have been shut down if they'd been with a major label.
And that lack of professionalism is why they are like lovable outlaws, aren't they?
Yeah. And they're truly
the two of them particularly.
Because they don't fake it. Like, if they don't like something, you'll know that. I think they always lived completely authentically. They didn't fake it for the record label because they didn't need to. Tony was so permissive in that way because he was smart and he knew that that's how to deal with a band like the Mondays, and that's how to get the magic out of them.
Yeah.
I'll send you the link to it because it's really interesting. Like, with all these years later, it's a brilliant bit of...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But made for schools programmes, of all things.
There's so many contradictions within that sentence, isn't there? Tony Wilson, Happy Mondays, school programme.
School programmes.
Yeah, be careful.
I know. It was brilliant.
Brilliant.
All right, Clint, thank you so much again. Really,
you're very
grateful.
Welcome, Ange. It's been great talking to you.
All right.
Brilliant. Right, well, thanks. Hopefully see you soon. If we get the band out to the California, I'll give you a shout.
Oh, please do. I'm there. I'll be at the front.
All right, it's great seeing you. All right,
lots
Angela.
Of
lots of love to you.
All right.
See you in a bit.
Take care.
Tell love to Chico for me, will you?
I will.
Yeah.
Thank
Brilliant.
You.
Brilliant. See you in a bit.
Oh, he's lovely, Clint, isn't he? That's all we've got for you this week. We're playing out with another Big Arm track. This one's called Flexin'. Keep listening to the end to hear what I can only assume is a homage to the Human League. It's from Paul Ryder's Big Arm album Radiator, which of course is out now. We're going to be back again, same time, same place, next week. And you can see the premiere of the video version of this episode next Sunday at 8 p.m. UK time. That is March the 10th on the YouTube channel, which is Glistening Stories. And I am going to be live in the chat with Chico, as usual. And that will be followed by a live stream chat at 9 p.m. with last week's guest, former Mondays manager Phil Sachs. If you'd like to be on the Zoom call and ask your questions to Phil in person, please join our Patrons Club at patreon.com/thePaulRyderTapes. There's even a free tier so you don't have to pay anything, and then you will get details of how to log into the stream. Please give us a nice review if you've not already done so, and please subscribe to this YouTube channel. On behalf of Paul Anthony Ryder, I would like to thank each one of you individually for your love and support. We really love the community that we're building here, and we've got lots more treats in store. Lots of love to all of you, and big love and thanks to the legend that is Clint Boone, and of course to the man himself, the late great Paul Anthony Ryder. Have a great week. Bye.
chasing, flexing on my cloud all alone. Guess it wasn't easy, flexing on my cloud all alone.
Listening Productions.